Warning, this episode was recorded in the middle of November of 2017. Due to the nature of the topic being discussed, some of the information is only accurate as of November of 2017. Since this episode is being released much later, we apologize for any errors and now outdated information. Hey, welcome to the Napcast. My name is David.
And my name is Seth, and today we are going to be doing another Google Autofill episode.
Hey.
So our last episode, David was explaining to me the ins and outs of solving a Rubik's Cube as fast as you possibly can. Yeah,
yes.
This concept of speed cubing.
And so today we're going to be playing Google Autofill relating to Rubik's Cubes and speed cubes, and I don't know what any of the questions are going to be. Seth has a question queued up on Google, and he's going to fill it in. So, for example, I don't actually know what it is, but something like, is a Rubik's Cube... And then, like, A, whatever the first option is, and then B, C, or something like that. So
yeah.
I don't know what the actual question is.
If any of you listening are not familiar with the Google Autofill game, how it works is you type a question into Google, and then a letter of the alphabet, and you do that in succession until you go through all of them and try to answer the questions that it comes up with. So,
and sometimes it comes up with the same question, so Seth might pick a different one or something like that. So you
all
never
right.
know. Let's find out.
Well, right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, here we go.
And I'm going to be answering this basically off the top of my head,
yeah.
Kind of like how Seth did for Mass Effect. So we'll see how much I actually know about Rubik's Cubes while
all
we do
right.
this.
All right, here we go. The first question, can a Rubik's Cube algorithms?
Can a Rubik's Cube algorithms? A Rubik's Cube cannot do anything by itself, but you can solve a Rubik's Cube using algorithms. In fact, you can solve an entire Rubik's Cube using one algorithm, which is how my dad learned how to do it.
Interesting.
I can do it that way, though it's much easier to learn a couple more. The thing about an algorithm is that when you apply it, it literally only does one thing, and that it does what you want it to do.
But it does it really well.
But it does it exactly as you need it to do. So if you can predict exactly how it works, or if you know how it works, you can use it to move pieces around and stickers around the way that you want to. So, but the more algorithms you know, the more you can do, because each algorithm will do something slightly different.
Oh.
So the more algorithms you can apply, the more you can solve things, and the more you can recognize and do different things. It's like having more tools in your toolkit, but you technically only need one. So
gotcha.
How's All that right. for an answer?
That's a good answer.
All right. Do I get an A? Oh, wait. No, I get a B now.
Yeah, now you get a B. Can a Rubik's Cube be unsolvable?
Technically, yes. So the way a Rubik's Cube works, there is such a thing as parity. Which basically means if you ever have like an edge piece, which is that piece with two stickers on it, if you have one of those flipped, like if you take it out of the cube and put it back in, it is flipped. Or you can have a corner piece rotated, which is similar to being flipped. So there's like two ways that one corner piece can be rotated. Or you can switch two edge pieces or at the same time.
So you basically have to hack the Rubik's Cube.
You have
to
take
it
apart and put it together wrong. So based on that, there's actually... what people refer to as 12 different, per se, universes. I would say universes in quotes, though you can't hear the quotes in my voice, maybe. Where there's actually 12 times the number of possible Rubik's Cube scrambles because of those different parities, where you can have a corner rotated, you can have an edge backwards,
oh,
or
wow.
you can have two pieces flipped with each other. But an actual Rubik's Cube itself, if you don't ever take it apart, it will never be unsolvable. Unless you rotate a corner because it's loose or if it's broken or something like that. But what's really cool is if you have an even numbered cube, like a 4x4 or a 6x6, you can actually have those parities that on a Rubik's Cube would be unsolvable. Because on a 4x4, you can switch two edges or you can flip one edge piece around. However, you still can't have a corner rotated. That will never be a parity that you can fix within a cube like that. Now, there are certain special puzzles you can. That's kind of a long-winded answer, but... I think it shows that I kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Maybe just a little bit.
All right, next question.
All right, here we
go. Can a Rubik's Cube cake?
There are such things as Rubik's Cube cakes.
I mean, I'm not surprised. You can make almost anything into a cake.
You really can, and they're great. I've never had a Rubik's Cube cake myself, but I am in some Facebook groups where some cubers, for their birthday, their mom or their friend, or, you know, they'll buy a cake, and it's a Rubik's Cube cake. And basically all it is when you make a cake, you just make it tall enough and you put frosting on the sides and patterns to make it look like a Rubik's Cube. And that's all there really is to it.
Well, now here's my question. Can you solve a Rubik's Cube cake?
You cannot, because it does not turn
oh.
very well. The cake just kind of falls apart and then it's a lie? Wait, that's not how it works.
No!
Oh,
not again!
And one little trivia fact, if you go look up Rubik's Cube cake pictures, almost all the time, that picture itself is an impossible configuration for a Rubik's Cube because they have like yellow and white next to each other, which on a traditional Rubik's Cube, those pieces, those colors will never be next to each other.
Ooh, somebody didn't do their research.
Right. So if you do your, if you scramble a Rubik's Cube and then make a cake based off of that pattern, that's fine. If you have a whole bunch of whites and yellows that don't belong and are next to each other, then you didn't do your research. All right. What is the next question that we have here?
All right. I didn't get any results for D.
Oh, that's a shame.
So let's see.
We'll just skip that one.
Can a Rubik's Cube easy move notation?
The notation for a Rubik's Cube, the easiest notation per se, for each of the six faces, however you're holding it, the top face is referred to as the upper face, which is the letter U, so a capital U. Your front face, which is the one facing you, is the capital F. And then you've got right face, or R. The left face is L. The back face is B, and then the bottom face, or down face, as opposed to being like back or bottom, because that would be confusing. So back is B, the bottom is D, so the down face. So the way the notation works is if you see the capital letter of one of those six letters, you turn that face clockwise as if you were looking at it. So turning the back one clockwise seems counterintuitive, but if you were actually to turn the cube around and look at it while you turn it clockwise, it makes more sense.
Okay.
If you see an apostrophe after it, that's an inverse. Or like a prime is what we call it. So if you have U, then you turn the top clockwise. If you have U prime, you turn it counterclockwise. If you see a 2, you turn it twice. And it doesn't matter which way you turn it because on a Rubik's Cube, turning it twice either direction results in the same result.
So just so that I'm clear and for the listeners at home, the move notation tells you how to move a Rubik's Cube in order to solve it?
Yes and no.
Essentially?
The way you have to learn algorithms is through that notation. So if you remember last episode where I went over the Soon algorithm really quickly, the Soon algorithm is R, U, R prime, U, R, U2, R prime, which is 7 moves. But I tried to describe it like how you turn it clockwise and then counterclockwise.
Okay.
So that's how you have to learn algorithms if you don't already know them. Usually what we use the notation for is reconstructing somebody's solve. So you see like how it was scrambled, and then you can follow exactly how they did it by following what their moves were, and you can see how they paired up their F2L or what algorithm they used for their last step or something like that. Or more commonly, that's how you scramble a Rubik's Cube. It's like in competition, the judges will use a specific scramble, which is like 25 to 30 different letters that will result in a completely scrambled Rubik's Cube, but then every competitor gets the exact same scramble.
Gotcha.
So that's where that's most commonly used. There's other complicated notation for like trying to move just a middle layer or like on a 4x4 through 7x7 if you want to move 2 or 3 layers, but that's the easiest notation.
All right, fair enough.
It's known as standard or WCA notation.
All right, so our next question, where can I buy a Rubik's Cube from?
Well, I mean, you can technically buy one from Walmart, but I don't really recommend them because they don't turn very well. They are the standard, but they don't turn the greatest. I highly recommend there's a website that you can find that's The Cubicle. So if you go type in thecubicle.us, you can buy speed cubes, you can buy puzzle cubes, you can buy all different manners of everything. It's mostly a speed solving website where you can buy the latest speed cubes, you can buy the latest magnetic cubes or the latest stickerless cubes. But you can also find a lot of other fun cubes as well, like just shape mods or just interesting puzzles to try or things like that that aren't built for speed.
Okay. All right. For G, can you get a Rubik's Cube?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I don't understand the context of the question. So are they referring to can you buy one? Because that's the same as before. If they're referring to can you understand one? Yes, but it takes a fair amount of practice, which I've kind of gone into a little bit before. Like, it's not as hard as people think it is. And in that sense, you can get it. Like, you can get what you're doing. But the more familiar you become with it, the easier it becomes.
Fair enough. All right. Can a Rubik's Cube hard to solve?
I love the grammar in these questions.
Oh, they're fantastic.
It's actually not terribly hard to solve. Again, as I've gone over, you just have to learn what you're doing and you just have to understand a couple simple algorithms and what they do. Beyond that, it's not terribly difficult. But if you were just to look at it, like not knowing a thing about it and try to comprehend it that way, you're not going to solve it.
Fair enough.
And that's how most people treat a Rubik's Cube is, oh, this is impossible. I'm just going to leave it and ignore it for now. And that's why whenever you find a Rubik's Cube, when you buy them, they're always solved. But whenever you find them in people's drawers, like in their attic or whatever, they're always scrambled because people are like, oh, I could solve this. And then they can't. So, but you just got to learn how to do it. It's actually not as hard as people think.
All right. Can you solve a Rubik's Cube in 2 moves?
No. There is a good prank YouTube video where someone had it not actually scrambled. All they had done was move 2 moves over and over. And it looked like it was scrambled, but his thumb was covering up a couple pieces that were very clearly solved. And it just looked like it was a scramble. And so he clearly showed how if you turn the right side and then the top side and then the right side and the top side, you would eventually solve it. But that's not how it works. To solve a Rubik's Cube, actually, you have to use more than just two moves or two repeated moves, whatever. But if you start with a solved cube and you apply a sequence or a pattern, like if you do RU, or if you do RUFU or something like that, and you do
A.
That's not what I was saying. No, but if you do the same thing over and over and over, the cube will solve itself. So like after 106 iterations of doing the right side and the top side, it will solve itself. Now, if you do like R2U2, not R2D2. Well, actually, if you do R2D2, it will. After like 6 iterations, it'll solve itself just based on how the puzzle works.
Oh.
So in that sense, technically, yes. But if it's completely scrambled, you're not going to solve it with 2 moves.
Fair enough. All right, Jay, can a Rubik's Cube jigsaw puzzle?
I mean, there are different kinds of puzzles. Like jigsaw puzzles are usually 2D, like where you put the pieces down on the and you're making a picture. Rubik's Cube puzzles are 3-dimensional, but they're both puzzles. I'm sure there are jigsaw puzzles out there that are Rubik's Cube related.
I'm not surprised.
But other than that, I'm not sure what the question could be referring to. So the jigsaw killer never used a Rubik's Cube as far as I know. And Erno Rubik is not the jigsaw killer.
Fair enough.
Spoiler alert.
Oh. All right, Kay, where can I buy a Rubik's Cube keychain?
Keychain? Well, another option. Again, you could probably go to Walmart and find them. I'm not actually sure. But if you go to thecubicle.us, you can find keychains there. There's a bunch of websites. There's another site. It's zcube.vip, I believe. It used to be like a Hong Kong site. Now it's something else. But there's another site that's like, if you go to Mefferts, which is the last name of the guy who invented the Pyraminx, like Mefferts.com or something like that. You can also find keychains there. So a quick Google search, which is, I guess, what these people are doing, will lead you to one. But, you know, you can find them at thecubicle.us.
All right.
They're usually about 30 millimeters across, whereas the standard Rubik's Cube is about 57 millimeters across.
All right. L, what does a Rubik's Cube look like inside?
Inside? Well, that's kind of interesting. This is going to be hard to describe just with audio. But basically, the core of a cube, the very center of it, there's what the core looks like. It's kind of, if you can picture a cylinder up and down, a very small cylinder, like round but like flat on the top.
Yeah.
And now picture another cylinder combined with it to make a plus side by side. And now make a 3D version of that where there's a third one that goes forward and out, like forward and backward, you know? So it's like 6 little cylinders kind of. But in each of those cylinders is like a screw. And so the centerpiece actually connects to the screw.
Okay.
But the centerpiece flares outwards. So it kind of, we'll call it an umbrella or a mushroom cap or something like that. And the way that the puzzle actually works is that the corner pieces have little, the part of their piece goes all the way down into the center and hooks underneath the center caps. And then the edge pieces will go over top of the corner pieces that hook underneath, but then will also hook underneath. So it's kind of, it's almost like spherical. All the pieces themselves are like around the core. It's kind of hard to describe in that sense unless you see it. But if you take one apart, which if you turn the top layer about 30 degrees and pop the middle edge out, you can take it apart.
Interesting.
But it's basically spherical with the little core in there. And the way it works, which is actually astonishing to me, is that all of the pieces in there are free floating.
Are they like, really?
With the exception of like the center pieces, which are directly connected to the core.
Right.
All of the other pieces, like the corners and the edges, are all just sitting there, not falling apart because of how it was designed. And that's what Rubik was trying to do. He wasn't trying to make a puzzle. He was trying to make a 3D object where it didn't fall apart despite all the pieces being independent. And that's why it can turn in the different ways that it does, is because all the pieces are independent. And that's what makes cubes like a 7x7 or a 17x17 or a 22x22 so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is that there's thousands of little pieces that are all stuck together but are not at all connected or glued together or anything. They're just all sitting underneath each other, but they never fall apart.
Wow.
And they can all move, and it's amazing.
Yeah, there are a lot more physics to a Rubik's Cube than I ever knew.
I know. There's also a great thing called group theory, but that's a mathematics problem, and I'm not going to go into that.
All right. So for M, we have, does solving a Rubik's Cube make you smarter?
Not really. There is the stereotype that people who do solve Rubik's Cubes are smarter. And I feel like if you were to sit down with a Rubik's Cube and spend half an hour and were to solve it with no prior instruction, you are probably pretty smart in the first place. Like I have a cousin who is legitimately a very smart cousin. He's like 27 or 28 or maybe 30 right now, where he sat down with a Rubik's Cube for like half an hour and he figured out how to solve it entirely on his own without any instructions, without anyone showing him, without anything except for him figuring it out. So in that sense, he was already smart. So solving it didn't make him smarter. For me, solving it doesn't make me smarter. It might help, I guess, a little bit with spatial, like 3D spatial reasoning and things like that. But in that sense, it doesn't make you any smarter than other 3D, whatever those things are called, than other puzzles that are in 3D space.
Gotcha. So
in that sense, it doesn't ever make you smarter. But, I mean, it can be a fun exercise. It can be something to occupy the brain, I guess.
Fair enough. All right, for Anne, can a Rubik's Cube names?
Can a Rubik's Cube names? I'm not entirely sure what this is going after, but one direction I'll take it is that all of these speed cubes that I've been mentioning to you before, like the 3x3 speed cubes, mm-hmm. they all have special, unique names because they're all like these Chinese brands or something like that. So way back when, 2011, 2010, the most popular brands were Dian cubes, which that means something, but I don't remember what it is. But like the Dian Guhong was a very popular cube, and it was the second version of the Dian 3x3. And then the fifth version, which is the Dian Zanchi, was the most popular and still is the most popular Dian cube. And it was used to set the world record back in 2011. And then around came cubes that are like the Shengshou Aurora, the Shengshou Wind, and I don't remember what the Shengshou actually means itself, but it's also something in like Japanese or Chinese or something. And then in 2013, along came a brand called Moyu, and there's a Moyu Aolong and an Aolong version 2, and then a Weilong and a Tanglong, and now they've got other things like...
A Longlong.
Well, there's a Linglong, is like a mini cube.
Oh, no.
That's an actual name for it. It means a mini cube. But all of these have special names and different versions, but then as soon as you, like, those are all 3x3s, but as soon as you get to like 4x4 and 5x5, it's the same prefix, but a different suffix. So instead of it being an Aolong and a Weilong, for a 4x4, it's an Aosu and a Weisu. And then for a 5x5, it's an Ao Shuang and a Wei Shuang and a Bo Shuang and things like that. So you get to 6
Way
and 7.
Wrong.
That's not actually one of them. and then more recently, there's a Qi Yi manufacturer, which there's a Qi Yi Wu Shui is the 4x4 and Wu Shuang is the 5x5 and the 3x3. I forget what it's actually called because I don't have one of those. But my main cube right now is a cubical Valk. Named after Mats Valk, who was the Netherlands cuber.
All right.
Other popular cubes there's a manufacturer that's GAN. So GAN's 356 version 2 or GAN's 356 Air is one of the most popular cubes as well, and that's what Felix uses.
Gotcha.
So that's some of the names, I guess you could say, if that's where the question is going.
All right. For M, Will Smith Rubik's Cube movie.
Will Smith can definitely Rubik's Cube. Didn't you already do M, though?
I did not. That was N.
Oh, did you skip M?
Oh, wait, I did. I did redo M.
Okay, we're going to O.
I know my alphabet. Can a Rubik's Cube online?
Technically, you can. For a while, Google actually had those little Google interactive things on the Google homepage. Google had one where you could solve a Rubik's Cube interactively.
Huh.
You can click and drag. So you can do Rubik's Cubes online. There's also programs where you can do like timing online, where you can like... It'll give you the scramble. You can press the space bar, and as soon as you're done with the solve, you can press the space bar again. Kind of like how stack mats work. So in that sense, you can, but you can also buy them online. But most of the time when you solve a Rubik's Cube, it's like that you're actually holding the puzzle because it makes it a little easier that way.
Fair enough. All right, P, can a Rubik's Cube program?
There are Rubik's Cube programs similar to being online. One of the more common programs is Herbert Kosiemba's program, which is basically a two-phase algorithm solver where you can put in, like you can show it a cube that's scrambled, it will find an optimal solution for it, or it can scramble cubes for you and things like that. So different versions of Kosiemba's program, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, different versions of his program are used in like Lego Mindstorms. When the Mindstorms thing, it can like solve a Rubik's Cube sometimes.
Yeah.
It uses a version of his program where instead of finding the optimal solution, which takes a long time, it finds a very quick two-phase solution that's like 20 moves instead of 18 or something like that, but it still works.
Fair enough.
So there's a bunch of programs there. That's a good quick answer, I think.
All right. Well, speaking of Q, can a Rubik's Cube quilt pattern?
I believe you can. I have very little experience with quilt patterns that are Rubik's Cubes, but I'm sure that you can. I don't even know if you can buy them online, but I bet there's something somewhere.
I bet you can't solve it, though.
Yeah, probably not. And once it's in a quilt form, you're not going to solve it.
All right, R, can a Rubik's Cube rules?
There are plenty of rules. I've kind of touched on these a little bit, like for speed solving specifically, where you have to have both hands on the mat. You get 15 seconds of inspection. Another rule that I haven't ever mentioned, I'll go over it quickly, is what's known as the +2 rule, where if you're solving a Rubik's Cube and you get done, you put your hands on the mat and everything, and one of the sides is off by more than 45 degrees, which is more than half a turn, you get +2 seconds. So instead of it being like a 10-second solve, it'd be 12.
Wow.
Or something like that. Now, if it's within 45 degrees but still off a little bit, that's fine. But once it's over 45, you add 2 seconds. Now, if you have a second face that's off by 45 degrees or more, now it's a DNF, which means did not finish. So if you have one side off by 45 degrees and another side that's off by 30 degrees, you'll only have a +2. If you have one side that's completely wrong, it's still only a +2. If you have two sides that are completely wrong, it doesn't count as a solve despite being really close. So do better next time.
Fair enough. S, can't solve a Rubik's Cube.
Well, there are tutorials on YouTube. Well, there are tutorials on YouTube. And there's PDFs and instructions you can find. And if you buy a Rubik's Cube, like from Walmart, for example, like the standard ones, it comes with a little instruction packet to show you. So it's very easy to solve. You just got to put a little effort into it.
All right, T, can a Rubik's Cube trick?
There are Rubik's Cube tricks. Like if you've seen that Rubik's Cube magician guy that like hides it in a bag and pulls it out and it's solved or solves it behind its back, he's solving it one-handed and he doesn't actually have it scrambled. He has it so that it looks scrambled, but he knows the moves. So as soon as he puts it in the bag, he executes like 6 or 7 moves really quickly, pulls it out and it's solved again. And he fools everybody because nobody really knows how easy it is to do that on a Rubik's Cube. He didn't fool me because I've seen that
before.
Well,
now we know, so he won't fool us anymore.
Ah, I have ruined his trick. Actually, I haven't. It still looks really cool.
All right. Can a Rubik's Cube underwater?
Yes. Kevin Hayes has done it underwater, and actually Max Park has done it underwater as well. He did a sub-5-second solve underwater just recently, I believe.
Wow.
But you can solve it underwater. It's not the greatest for the cube itself, so don't use your best cube underwater. I've never done it underwater, though.
Fair enough. All right, V.
Uh-oh.
Can you lubricate a Rubik's Cube with vegetable oil?
I don't recommend vegetable oil. Now, lubricating Rubik's Cubes is something that people do because it makes it turn faster. There's less friction. The most common things you can use are actually silicone lubricants. So, like, there's little silicone gels you can put in or a silicone spray. I do not recommend WD-40, which is what people always used to use.
Oh, that sounds a terrible idea.
Because that's actually, it's like an oil-based thing, and that'll actually corrode the plastic of a Rubik's Cube.
Oh.
So, use silicone-based, like, there's you know, if you go to the cubicle, you can find these silicone gels that you just, like, put a little bit in the center of the Rubik's Cube. You move, you know, you do, like, couple solves with it, and all of a sudden your Rubik's Cube moves much more smoothly and there's less friction. So you can lubricate it, but I don't recommend vegetable oil or nail polish or whatever all these other goofy things are people use. Just use typical lubrical, like the silicone lubes. It's much easier.
All right. W, can a Rubik's Cube world record?
Can a Rubik's Cube world record? Technically, the world record for Rubik's Cube for single is 4.59 seconds. I forget the guy's name. It's something vaguely Asian, I believe. I don't... I feel kind of bad, but I don't remember his name. He's a newer cuber. I think he goes by Steve for his American name, but his actual name is something different. But the world record average is 5.8 seconds, which is set by Felix Zemdegs, where 3 of his 5 solves were under 6 seconds, and the 4th one was like 6.0.
Oh.
And then his 5th one was a 6.2 or something like that. So he has the world record average.
All right. X. Kenny Rubik's Cube X and O method.
X and O method. Now, I have to admit, I don't actually know what that is. My first guess is that has something to do with fewest moves challenge, where you can use an X and an O kind of to keep your placeholders. You can use commutators when you're in the middle of solving it. But that's a long story. There might also be, I think there's a cube that is an X and O cube. That's like, it's got like tic-tac-toe on each side or something like that. Which it's a special type of cube that requires a special method, but since I don't have one, I've never learned it. That's my best guess as to what that's actually referring to. I'll have to look that up later and see what I'm missing.
All right. Why?
I don't know.
I guess I'm asking a question, but
might as well for the podcast.
For the podcast, can you take a Rubik's Cube apart?
Yes. Why? What does Rubik's Cube have to do with why you're taking it apart?
I think it was you.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Well, yes, you can take it apart. A traditional Rubik's Cube is harder to take apart because it doesn't actually have like springs and things in it that make it easier. If you have a speed cube, the center caps, you can pull them off and you can actually unscrew a screw that's in the middle of it, and that allows you to take the pieces out that way. If you're trying to take apart a normal Rubik's Cube, turn one of the layers about 30 degrees. And you can pop out the middle piece in between the two corners. If it's really stuck, you can use a screwdriver to pop it out, like a flathead screwdriver. Do be careful because you can actually damage things if you do it wrong.
Oh.
So don't do it normally. Don't try to take out a corner. Don't turn it 45 degrees. Turn it about 30 degrees. That's the easiest. But yes, you can take them apart. But if it's very poorly made, you take it apart and it falls apart, it's not worth having in the first place.
Fair enough. All right. And lastly, can a Rubik's Cube zigzag pattern?
Zigzag pattern. That's a pattern where on the top layer, the front right and the bottom left are backwards. And on the bottom layer, the front left and the bottom right are backwards. And then you've got your middles backwards in the middle layer as well. And what that does is that makes a zigzag on four of the sides.
Oh, okay.
And I believe the easiest way to do that, the way that I always did it, is if you're holding it, turn the right side clockwise and the left side clockwise, and then turn the entire thing, the entire cube clockwise, as if you were turning the top clockwise, but just the entire cube, and do that again like six times. And that will make a zigzag pattern.
Cool.
There's other easy ways to do it that I don't actually know, because there's a whole bunch of patterns you can do. Like, you can do a snake pattern. You can do cube within a cube within a cube. You can do, you know, H's everywhere. You can move just the centers around. There's a whole bunch of fun patterns to do. And the bigger cube you have, the more patterns you can do, like patterns on a 7x7. Like, if you do super flip on a 7x7, it looks amazing.
I may have to look some of those up later.
I'll have to show you at some point. But yeah, there's a lot of patterns you can do. The zigzag pattern is not terribly difficult, though I don't actually know how to do it on bigger cubes now that I think about it.
Fair enough.
All right. So then we made it through the entire alphabet.
That does it for our second Google Autofill episode.
And I think I knew most of those questions. I have to go do some research on the X and O puzzle, because what in the world is that?
Yeah.
I don't remember. But and I think that also actually will wrap up season one for the Napcast.
Yeah, that is season one for the Napcast.
All right. So thank you for listening. And to sign off, what key should we do this time, Seth?
Oh, what was the very first key that we did?
Ooh, I don't actually remember. That was a long time ago.
You know, I think it was actually middle C.
Middle C, which is the common middle C?
Yeah.
All right, let's do middle C. Do you want to take the tonic again, since you haven't done tonic as much?
Yeah, I can do tonic.
We'll give you the tonic, and I'll do... Should I do the minor to the major third?
Sure.
All right.
Here we go. Our last key for season one of the Napcast
is middle C.
Goodbye!
Goodbye! Oh, wait, no. That's not how that goes. Oh, that was fun, though. Oh.
Boots and pecans and boots and pecans and
pecans and cats and pecans and cats and wait. I'm allergic to cats. Does that work?
Every time you do that.
I only did it once.
Oh, man. You always manage to say something that just catches me completely off guard.
That should almost be like a goal of mine, maybe. It's not, but it's the greatest when it happens.
And we were recording this time. That's the best part.
Oh, I want to throw that into a booba reel for sure.